City Council Work Session, January 23rd, 2018.
For this,
Thank you.
Yeah, it happens.
Want me to sit it down?
Oh, yeah.
You got a warm bag.
Is this yours?
No, that's yours. I don't know how it got over there. Where's that?
Okay, we'll call this meeting to order. Ms. Jacobs, would you give the public notice, please?
Yes, the January 23rd, 2018 City Council Work Session was publicly noticed on January 5th, 2018. And as a reminder, materials for the mayor and city council must be given to the attending staff for distribution. Prior to speaking at the podium, please state your name and address for the record to maintain order. Speakers must be recognized by the council president. Please silence your cell phones and all electronic devices for the duration of this meeting.
Right. Do we have any public comments that are not related to either the parking meters or the Ocala Fiber Network presentation? All right. With that, we'll get into the first topic of discussion, 4A parking meters.
Ty Chikazola, Growth Management Director. Before I start, I'll introduce the rest of the Growth Management Department that's here, specifically working with parking. Chip Rich is our Senior Projects Administrator. Heather Stein is our parking specialist. And Holly Lane works on the financial side as our fiscal manager. We'll try to give a short presentation and try to leave questions for after, try to give us enough room. And again, we're just going to touch a little bit upon how we got here, kind of where the parking district and the park taxing districts came from, a little bit about our parking exempt zone, our parking benefit zone, a little bit about valet parking, our parking garage, our parking program that Chip oversees, and then some information about the new meters and some of the parking data that we have been tracking the last couple of years, and then look at some related revenue and expenses, and then talk about some recommendation and options going forward. So the first slide talks a little bit about back in the 60s, there needed a mechanism to help control and manage parking in the taxing districts. A big part of creating those taxing districts was to do the parking and set up by the DDC. And for many years, it ran through the DDC. The taxing districts supported the parking program up until about the early 90s. Finally, in the early 90s, we had to make some changes because of revenue. In 2010, we finally disbanded the DDC. And 2013, that's when we did that referendum. We took the taxing district language, it no longer needed to be a referendum item, and just put it back into the code. So the taxing districts exist today, but not the DDC. And again, when the DDC no longer was involved in parking was around 1995, again, they just could not support having a parking enforcement person and a second person who was operating the parking program at the time. It moved to recreation and parks, and it stayed there for a number of years, first operated by a part-time position sometimes, and then we also had a full-time parking enforcement specialist that was there quite a number of years. After a while, when he retired, the park rangers took over the program, and then in 2010, that's when the latest study that we did, and we'll talk a little bit about that, is the Rich and Associates study, talk about how to better manage parking, and at that point, that's when we brought the parking enforcement under the Growth Management Department. For a number of years, it operated with Chip, as he was the code manager at that time, the code enforcement manager. Finally, in 2015, we kind of broke away Chip's position from the code enforcement and created kind of our own parking enforcement division. At that time, we knew what was coming. The garage was starting to be funded, built, and then would come online in late 2016. A little bit about the parking exempt zone. When that DDC and the taxing districts were created in the 60s, part of it was to create a parking exempt zone. So the parking exempt zone is kind of an opportunity to have a stronger downtown, to have downtown where you don't have to provide parking. You don't have to be saddled with that when you're developing the property. And our downtown has developed quite nicely with the parking exempt zone. And that existed for many years. Again, the question was, how should we expand it and should we expand it? And we worked through that through the 2010 Rich and Associates study, and that talked about expanding it somewhat, about 15 blocks. We looked at expanding it a little bit further and decided, well, there's another maybe option of helping to alleviate some of that issue, but without having to expand the parking exempt zone. The one key thing is the parking exempt zone is the city does provide the parking in that. So that is a key thing in terms of how big you want your parking exempt zone. And again, this is a little bit about the parking exempt zone in terms of, you know, that the density was not there to expand it. Right in 2010, there was a deficit of about 262 people in the parking spaces. And then the projection was about 433 spaces. And again, that played a big part in the development of the garage a few years later to address that deficiency. And then the other option I talked about was the parking benefit zone, and we created this about 2 years ago. We've used it a couple of times, and hopefully I'll explain a little bit more about it with some of the new spaces coming on board. The parking benefit zone is kind of maybe what we want to do citywide in a lot of areas. It's really a mechanism. For years, planners and developers all thought that you needed all this parking, you know, and there were these minimum requirements you had to put in this parking. Well, times are changing. We really don't like minimum parking. We would rather have, maximum parking. We would rather have too little parking versus too many parking. And that's a trend that we see throughout the country, and we would most probably like to address citywide. And we've been trying to be as lenient as possible, giving tools to in the code to allow people to address the parking on a case-by-case need, because every business is changing, especially in the retail world. So the parking benefit zone does that. A lot of it is you could park on street, or you can work it out between adjoining property owners, really without having to come to city council. In the past, we would bring agreements to city council and have to work it out. We want that to be worked out by the property owners. It's their business. They need to control how they're parking. And then a little bit about the downtown garage. And again, the garage eliminated that deficiency that we saw in the Rich and Associates study in 2010. 400 spaces is pretty much addressed that deficiency. We've added also some other spaces. But as we move forward with the hotel, 125 spaces will be used by the hotel, paid spaces, and we'll start to see some concerns with parking again in the parking exempt zone, especially on the south side with the chamber lot going away, approximately 70 spaces. We hope to see the garage should be able to absorb that loss of those spaces, but it is going to be a change. So we're kind of prepared for that with the spaces. Right now we're averaging about, we have city parkers in there, we have some of our vehicles, but we're averaging about, it looks like, about 75 to 100 non-city vehicles in the parking garage, which is pretty good at this point. So we do have capacity left to absorb some of that need with the chamber lot going away. And one of the other mechanisms that we talked about in the Rich and Associates study, and actually the downtown master plan, was to create a valet. And we ended up doing the valet. It's kind of really, at this point, it was designed to be a valet that is a centralized valet that could be used across the board by different property owners, but it's only at nighttime, so it really is limited right now through Mark's Prime, and they have operated it since that time. We've had a new operator come in this last year, and we've been working with him, and we hope to expand the downtown valet program. We're looking at this point to take out some spaces, some meter spaces on the west side of the square and operate, if it can be feasible, to have a day and night valet service so that we would have businesses addressed during the daytime as well as other businesses or restaurants at nighttime. And with, you know, with the new restaurant at Ivy House and some of the other restaurants that have come, it really is a need to address that issue. And again, we will have likely some spaces available in the garage to park the valet or some in our new parking lot that we're working on the west side of the downtown where the Wells Fargo drive-through is. And then a little bit about the parking program. We kind of, like I said, in 2015, we started kind of rebranded it, trying to kind of give it its own identity. We knew the garage was coming. We knew we were much more involved in it and much more complicated than it was many years ago. You know, we were working towards putting in additional meters as well as managing the garage. One of the things that we looked at was, and I show this picture of the little small vehicle, instead of using a big truck that we used for many years or the park rangers use their trucks, we tried to get a vehicle that everybody can recognize and that was easily maneuverable through the garage as well as downtown. And I think it's been quite successful. I know Heather, it makes her life a lot easier. And again, part of the parking program was less enforcement and more education. A big role of Heather, and Heather's done a great job, and we're very happy with her work, is she's really outreached to the property owners and tried to work with them and not become an enforcement, you know, you're late, you know, you know, the meters are not, you know, you pass your time on the two-hour spaces. She's really more to try to get people into the compliance and educate them about how everything works. And this past year is a big change with the meter program. And again, Chip is our senior projects administrator. We do have a part-time specialist when filled. It hasn't been filled the last few months. And we brought that person on specifically to kind of address some of the issues with the garage. At the time we were, you know, the garage, our parking enforcement normally stopped between 4 and 5. Because of the garage issues, we wanted to have more of a management throughout the garage from 8 to 8. We have security at nighttime, but we don't have that security in those early evening hours. And so the hope of that person is to try to fill that gap and also to assist Heather when needed. So that we would have some backup. And so right now we're in the process of refilling that position. And then a little bit about the Streetline program and the Parker app in terms of, we've been working with that for the last couple of years before the meters went in, and so I think we're in our third year, 2015, 16, and 17. We have 192 spaces, the pucks are in the ground, and they registered the data in terms of the parking. They're in non-metered as well as metered spaces. And that gives us kind of real-time availability of what, who is parking in what space. So no longer would you have to chart somebody if in a non-meter space like they do in the past. You would be able to manage that through the Streetline system. And that system is, like I said, on our third year, and that is one of the ones we have in the past couple of years have put that back, funding it through the taxing district. So about $25,000 a year is needed to manage that data going forward. And then there's other parking lots that we manage. For many years, we've been managing parking, and it's even more now needed as we get further into some of the redevelopment opportunities, trying to be as flexible as possible, trying to get as many lots under control. We have that capability to do that. We're trying to get a couple more lots under control, some inside the parking exempt zone, some outside, so that we would have more of an inventory and we can provide more options going forward. But as you can see, it's managing almost, you know, 1,500 spaces when you're talking about on-street, off-street, and the garage. And then here's a picture of our new parking meters. Again, the parking meters were installed last March, so they're approaching their one-year anniversary. Actually, the McKay meters, the McKay company is out here today, and they're doing some modifications to the software to make it a little bit better, like a little bit more clearer in terms of what space is on what side when they're in the double spaces. And they're also providing Apple Pay. We've installed Apple Pay. So we pretty much have all the payment options in Android Pay also. So we have pretty much all the options available in the meters, including coins. And coins is still a big part of that. Right now we're looking at about a 70-30 split in terms of coins versus credit card. Again, the meters, we had 62 meters previously in three locations, the square, one of the parking lots, and then on the north side. And that kind of changed back in 2008. We did a small parking study, and there were a lot of the meters at that time were in the parking lots, and then at that point they moved them around the square until they stayed. So that was from early to 2008 until 2017. And again, it was a big change at that time to try to make that change going from two-hour enforcement to the meters back in 2008. Again, it took some time, but people got used to it. And again, the 148 new meters that we purchased, single and double space, total of 262 spaces with meters. They're solar powered and the multiple payment methods. And then this is a map just showing, again, a little bit in terms on the north side where the meters were versus the new ones. Again, we had that just the one strip on First Street. Now we have them down Magnolia, First Avenue, as well as First Street and Second. And then the meters on the south side. Again, we went from the square and parking lot on Broadway to meters, again, in the parking exempt zone. We don't go any further than Second, even though the parking exempt zone goes a little bit further. We did not. Those are just stayed as two-hour enforcement. And then this is a kind of a breakdown for the parking revenue. We looked at it from May 1 to the end of the year. Again, that was the cost of the meters, the $126,000. The installation was approximately $7,500. That was done in-house through our facilities department and public works. We had decal expense. Now the revenue, as you can see, is quite changed. It went from 26 to 73 in that time. The expense for McKay meters, that is for the software that did to manage the meters and the credit card processing. The McKay meters don't have any expenses right now. Everything that they're doing is free of charge, including what the upgrades they are making at this point. The street line, again, I talked about it being $25,000 for the year. That was the amount for that portion of it. It's a little bit less this year versus last year, but it pretty much equals out, it seems, over the course of the year. Clancy is our citation system, and again, that's pretty much the same, a little bit up this year versus last year. And then there's the point and pay transaction. That's the actual cost of doing those transactions with your credit card. Salaries, we looked at, and again, we looked at just Heather's salary as a parking specialist and when we do have the parking part-time person. So that's the difference between that is having that parking person. Even though we didn't have them in that most of that period, we just went ahead and so that we would have the comparison of the two. And again, we have, you know, traditionally when we have had parking and from DDC to Rec and Parks to Growth Management, we never really charged off the the manager of that, like the manager of the DDC. We never really charged off the cost of that person towards it, but you could, and pretty much that hasn't changed. That would be Chip's salary over the last couple of years. And then a little bit about the citations. This year, the warnings are down. I mean, the warnings are up. The citations are down, and we hope that's a continuing trend. We'd rather be giving out the warnings versus the citations, and hopefully the warnings will go down as well as the citations as everybody becomes more familiar with the parking situation. Again, that's all parking lots as well as on-street parking, the meters and reserve spaces, I mean, in the two-hour spaces. And then here, some parking data. As part of what we looked at is we looked at 2016 versus 2017 in the fourth quarter. And part of that, it was looking at a couple things. Occupancy, how long people are in the meter, how long are they in the spaces in terms of minutes, and also looking at turnover rate. And as you can see, occupancy-wise, if you look at Magnolia and Broadway, we've seen a shift between the fourth quarter. And the fourth quarter, we did, I think we had just opened the garage and we wasn't really seeing a lot of people parking in the garage. But as you can see, there's definitely a trend of on Broadway, in that section between First and Magnolia. You can see that the occupancy level has dropped from the 80s, upper 80s, until the mid 60s. Again, part of that could be that those people are parking in the garage. And we see a biggest drop of that is in the early morning hours. If you look at some of the data between 8 and 11 on street parking and where they're now metered spaces, they were occupied about 75 to 80%. Now they have dropped significantly in the morning. So people are not parking. They are parking. They're going to the free spots somewhere in the downtown, we think, and not parking. They're not paying to park in those metered spots. Around the lunchtime hour, it's stabilized. It's very close, but it's a slight less than what it was in 2016. So, and I'll go to the next slide, and we can talk a little bit about more. And again, this is the duration changed. If you look at the first three are ones where the meters are located at, they're a little bit up or the same, slightly down in one of them. It kind of averages out. But if on the big one, the 199 to 143, that is in a two-hour spaces, so those down Broadway, so you can see that people are kind of gravitating to the two-hour space, non-metered, if they can. So what the 199 means is that they're staying over the 2 hours, so they could be subject to parking enforcement in that time period.
How do you know those 199 are staying over the 2 hours?
Because it's 120. It's a two-hour parking. So anything, it would exceed the 2 hours. So it's over 3 hours the average stay is during that time. So we do see that trend, and that's in the block, the one block past plot pie. And then this is the comparison of arrivals. And again, that number is down. Again, those are measuring the spaces that are monitored by Streetline. And again, looking at that data at 8 and 12%, it versus the 2 to 4 hours versus the 10 hour. Looking at that data, again, it kind of corresponds to the 100 or so, 75 to 100 that are kind of parking in the garage. So that we do see on these kind of couple charts that we do see people moving into the garage. We can't be 100% sure of that because we don't monitor the garage. We hope to do that in the future, to monitor the garage, to have you know, more accurate numbers. That's an observation that we have as staff has looked at over the last couple of weeks and looking at, you know, keeping track of that, but there's no hard data to show that. The hard data does show that there's less people in the spaces, in those parking spaces. And again, that could be what, you know, the big part of the meter program in the study was to try to get is the turnover and trying to make those spaces available for customers and then the long-term parkers like the employees would be going to free spaces if possible. So that data could be taken that way, or it could be taken that there's less people using the parking meters. And then we get to the recommendations. Again, we're looking at to continue to work on our inventory. We're looking to create more spaces in parking lots. We're looking at the Wells Fargo. We're talking to the church about doing a lot on Fort King, even though it's technically outside of the downtown. It is needed, especially on special events, to have some control over that and also help with some of the redevelopment that is occurring right there on Wauthula and Fort King. We're looking to continue to add some free parking. We're looking at approximately 40 spaces on First and Magnolia, and we'll be bringing that to council soon to look at that alignment. About 15 of them would be on Magnolia, and about 40 would be on First, on the north side of the square. And again, that kind of falls into the parking benefit zone. A lot of those spaces would be, and again, they would be free. They could be two-hour enforcement, or some we could have actually no enforcement. We still haven't decided. Once we get the alignments completed in the number, then we can talk about what kind of enforcement or timing would be. Again, we would look like we would continue to adjust the meters where needed in terms of going to, we have, you know, the basic is the two-hour time. We do have four-hour in some cases, and we do have the 10-hour. The meters can be programmed to make those changes. And so that is something that, you know, we need to be cognizant of as we're going forward and continue to work with the businesses where needed. I mean, and if we do need more time, you know, we're open to address those issues. And it needs to be that way. I think it needs to address as times change and businesses change and downtown growing. So that flexibility is there with the meters. Continue to monitor the parking meters on the fringe of the parking exempt zone. Some of the ones that we looked at, if you looked on the north side, that would be the north side. One of the lowest areas is that area on Magnolia, up against the county lot. We're looking to put some free meters on the other side, I mean, free spaces on the other side. But those meters are performing pretty low at this point. So I think we would need to look at, continue to look at to see if we need to maybe pull it back and just to go to a two-hour enforcement instead of having the meters in certain locations. So we are monitoring that, and I think the more data we get in over this next year, we'll have a better idea of how these meters are performing. Go back. We'll be looking to remove meters as necessary as the trail or spaces, as the trail continues to grow and some of the changes that are happening there. And again, that will address some of the needs for like Answerphone and some of the businesses up there. We can put more parking on First. We'll maybe take some meters out because of the hotel there on Broadway. And then also if we expand the parking on the valet zone, on the west side of the square, we would take out maybe 5 or 6 meters on that west side. So we'll be taking out some of the existing meters as the parking program changes. And then implement that valet program. I think that's important going forward. I think it is most probably going to be a big help to some of the newer restaurants that are coming on board, as well as the existing businesses in operating the daytime. We're kind of excited about having that. The valet manager operator at this time is still trying to work out all the details. He is hired right now by Marks, and he's trying to work with the other businesses. But I think there's a support there from many, especially many of the restaurants, but as well as some of the retail. We're continuing to add wayfinding signage. A big part of that is State Road 40, adding some more wayfinding signage showing the parking and where some of the locations are. And that will be coming over the next year. Adding parking information, we can use the message boards on the square. We haven't done that. I think we can do a better job at that. Add some additional temporary signs concerning some of the parking, where the meters are and this, the other spaces, so to help doing this transition of people getting more familiar with it. And then we talked about filming some public service announcements and messaging to get out there, not on our webpage, but also to better talk about a little bit about how the parking program works, so people would be able to use that as a visitor or as a you know, people coming to downtown. And then we would continue to work on the downtown trolley. We did that short presentation. I mean, we did that short trial run back in October. Unfortunately, it wasn't as successful as we thought because there was some changes with some of the streets being blocked off. But I think the DBA is really supportive of that going forward, and we hope to continue that. And then I put in work to slow traffic on State Road 40. As you know, we've had a recent accident, but that beyond that, I mean, we want to slow the traffic down. We want to slow the traffic down on First and Magnolia also, but we want to slow the traffic down on State Road 40. We are going to have the crossing for the trail track. We are having, you know, more connection between the downtown, especially with the hotel coming in, and there's going to be some lane changes that are scheduled. We're working with DOT, but we really do need to address some of those issues to try to make it as safe as possible. And I think slowing the traffic down is a big factor. That's the conclusion. Open for any questions.
I'm sure we have a lot of questions. I also see a lot of folks in the audience. Do we want to talk first, or do you want to get some of their? It's up to you. We'll take some.
I just want to ask one quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
Is parking free on holidays?
Parking is free, yes, on holidays like Christmas or MLK Day or Memorial Day. When the city's not working, yeah, we don't have parking enforcement. And it's free after 6, and it's free on weekends.
Okay.
And I think we, like we say, that was part of doing the signage, that we do get more information out there so that people are not trying to feed the meters at night or on the weekend. And that has slowed considerably.
I was going to wait a little bit, but along that line, is there anything on the meter itself that says it's free when it's free? And if can we have that?
Yeah, I mean, they have that the parking is, they have doing the time period Monday through Friday, 8 to 6.
I mean, in an electronic screen, when I go to pay on a Saturday afternoon, is there anything that tells me don't put your quarter in, don't swipe your credit card because it's free?
I think it does now. I mean, in early on, I think they were shutting the meters off, but that became a problem with McKay meters, which shutting it off because people were kind of getting frustrated because they were trying to feed the meter. So, and I agree. I think we need to do a better job so that people do know that it is not required on weekends.
Is there a way in the software that, because it's a smart meter, it knows what time it is, I assume, because it's keeping track of how long you've been there and all that stuff. Could it not just say free parking at 6 o'clock on, you know, in the meter, in the software?
Chipping one of you.
Good morning, Council. Chip Rich, City of Ocala Growth Management Department, 201 Southeast 3rd Street, Ocala, Florida. We do have very limited space on the screen. We could try to remove some of the current verbiage and put, you know, do not pay on weekends or holidays.
Is there any way, and I understand what you're saying, but I mean, the only thing you would need after 6 o'clock is free parking. I mean, is there any way for the meter itself to know it's 6 o'clock and then just to shut down its capability of selecting a space, shut down the capability of adding time, all those things?
Yeah, we tried that initially with turning them off, but we were receiving some frustration and complaint and what have you when people wouldn't read and pay anyways. Then they were wanting refunds and things of that nature. It doesn't have a slot to refund any money. It just takes the money. So if they put the money in, it takes it.
Can the display be made to say free parking?
I think that we can incorporate a separate display. I'm going to have to check into that further with the vendor. There's four displays that cycle, and right now they're pretty much giving information on how to use the meter and what's accepted. And if we could change that display after a certain hour is what I would like to investigate. So that at a certain hour it changes to a different display, I'd have to check into that.
I'd love for it, instead of giving all those other, I mean, I think the instructions are good for the daytime, and I think they're needed. But again, at 6 o'clock, literally the only thing I would want it to say or be able to do is free parking. Because I think as soon as you, you know, select your space and get invested in that, obviously those displays go away because you're in the mechanics of paying for parking at that point. So I think it would be important to have something that takes over in the meter and just says.
I certainly could investigate that to determine if we can change the display on a specific time frame. I'm just not sure whether that can be.
You know, the parking on weekends or the holidays, that was a great question because I didn't know it was free, but there's nothing that we never say parking's free. Or maybe in a press release or something that Katie sends out.
On our website, too, that it's free on the weekends and holidays, but I would like to see that increased. On the weekends, we've considerably dropped in the people that are paying it. I think Sunday we had $5, so it's considerably down, but some people are. And I and others have told folks, hey, you don't have to pay on the weekend. Some people say, well, we don't mind. We're paying it anyways. We're a little hesitant on turning them off because people expect something to happen when they put a quarter in. And if nothing happens, then they think the machine is malfunctioning. So it would be, if we could incorporate that with a screen, I think that would be the way to go.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Turning it off, that's confusing. But if it just said free parking, I put a quarter in and it still says free parking, and I push a button and it still says free parking, I think I'll get the message.
Good information. I just,
Mr. Wardell, we really need to take advantage of the electronic billboard on the square itself. It should say free parking, you know, so that the public knows when they come into the downtown it's free.
Any other comments before we take a lot of public comment?
I'm sure we've got one other question. So what determines when a warning is given and when a citation is issued? Is it a certain number of warnings and then it goes to a citation, or is it the...
Yes, sir. With the 2013 revamping of the code, and even before that, we were offering a free citation on everyone's first try. If they messed up the first time visitor that, you know, didn't know or what have you, didn't pay, they would get a warning citation. We changed that to go to, at first it was, once you got the first one, that was it. So what we changed that is that it recycles every 6 months. So now if you made an error and didn't pay and then 6 months later did an error again, you get a warning citation. And then they go up from that. We lowered the prices that they would ratchet up for each continuing citation by $25 per citation. So the first citation was free, the second one was a $25 value, and then we lowered it.
We actually have a citation, but it doesn't cost anything.
Doesn't cost anything, but it counts as a citation, yes, sir. And that's managed through our Clancy software.
I like being put on double secret probation.
Yes, sir.
I have one question for you, Jay. I have more than one question, but I want to hear from those who attended the meeting as well before I ask my other questions. What's the busiest time of day you're seeing downtown?
During the daytime, we really ramp up at lunch. We get between 80 and 90% capacity. And then during the evening, we have the same effect. And at some points, we're at total capacity during the dinner hour.
And so the evening is the busiest time downtown, and we're not charging or using the meters at that point?
Correct. And we changed the hours, working in coordination with the Downtown Business Alliance, to try and stem some of the worker inflow, like between 3 and 4 and 5 o'clock, through the use of the meters, to extend the time of the meters and the enforcement of the meters, to try to push the employees to the free spaces and then leave the other spaces available for people who are coming to eat dinner and what have you.
But in the evening is the busiest time?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting that when the most people are downtown, when they're most using the parking, we have zero parking enforcement.
There was a time frame where we did want to extend hours because we were receiving some input from business owners that, hey, we'd like to keep it going a little bit longer in the evening, but we backed off of that.
Chip, when you do give a citation and they're fined, where does the money go?
Comes to the city.
Where? What department?
General fund.
Where do they pay it?
Oh, well, we've included a lot of ways for folks to pay. They can send a check in the envelope that comes with the citation, or they can pay it online, or they can pay in person.
Are these people keeping up with their payments, or are they letting them drag?
We've done a lot of work in that regard over the past few years. When we first took over, we had a little over 11,000 that had not paid. We've narrowed that down to about 3,000 now. So we have some that are unpaid that are out there that we send dunning letters on. Eventually, we passed the ordinance where their registration privileges would be suspended until they did pay their citations. We've only had, I think, two of those occur so far. The ones that don't pay basically sit there until they do pay.
Okay. It seems to me that we need, if it's a law that we pay, people should pay.
Yes, sir.
And back in the old days, we had a lot of people didn't pay, and we lost a lot of money because nobody enforced it.
Yes, sir.
In the meantime, we're trying to give people free parking as much as possible.
Yes, sir.
And that's good. But if we're just curious how that worked.
Well, now we work quite diligently to send out Dunning letter, and it goes in various languages as well.
Right.
And
I understand.
We're trying to do those once a quarter. And we don't always get them all done.
I know.
Each quarter.
Right. I didn't realize it was 3,000 that hadn't paid.
That's the last that I can recall, but we've been working that quite steadily.
Okay.
If I'm on that list, let me know.
Yes, sir.
I just don't, you know, it's just funny that you know, we get a speeding ticket, we got to pay it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Chip.
Chip.
Yes, ma'am.
The ones that don't pay the tickets, are they continuously parking?
Some do.
In the,
yes, ma'am, some.
You don't put boots on the cars anymore?
Yes, we do. If we can catch them in place, and we have a procedure where we first notice them before we put a boot on the car, so we make sure that we have achieved notice, either through a posting or through a certified mail, and then our citation writer will notify us immediately if it's a boot situation, and then we'd make a determination whether or not we have lawfully noticed them. If we have, we can put the boot on.
And now I have one more question, too, before we go to public comment. I promise this is my last one before public comment.
I'm glad you
caveat that.
Yeah.
Looking at the revenue and expense sheet, which I really appreciate, Ty, thank you for preparing all this, it's almost literally down to the dollar revenue neutral. Okay, the money we're bringing in through the meter revenue versus those expenses, it's a zero, almost a zero-sum game. So clearly our goal in installing the meters was not to generate revenue, and I'm glad that we show that. When we did put the meters in, did we have measurable goals or targets that we were aiming for? I mean, some way to go back now and look at.
Yes, sir. I think that we don't indicate the citation revenue, and we don't indicate the reserve monies that are taken in by the department or the division as well.
Sure.
So there would be a little bit of revenue generated in that as well. But
I'm not I'm not looking for it to make money. I mean, just, no,
I think our goal was to be as revenue neutral as we could be. Right. And I think we're working diligently to try to ensure that.
Did we have other measurable targets or goals as far as how many people we wanted parking downtown? I mean, what were we looking for when we installed these meters?
I think the main goal, which was identified also in the various studies that were done and also within our meetings with the DBA, was to try to move owners and employees away from the immediate on-street parking into reserve lots. And then as the meters went in, we wanted them to go to free parking, which we provided free parking in the garage. That was the reason why we did not charge for the garage, was that there's a lot of theories about what to charge for and what not to charge for, and it depended on what the goal would be. And if the goal was to move some of the vehicles off of the main streets where the perception was, well, every time I go downtown, I can't find a place to park, I think that we've worked towards that goal because we're moving between 80 or 75 and 100 cars into the garage a day. And the statistics for the data that we receive from Streetline show a decrease corresponding to the number of vehicles that are moving to the garage. So that was one goal. The other goal was to try to maintain as revenue neutral situation as we could. Obviously, we could have left citation prices high. We could have enforced significantly stricter on citation payments and booting and all of the other aspects of enforcement. We've tried to balance enforcement with education and, you know, trying to get people in the last mile, what we call the last mile, which was, you know, get you to a space to park in our downtown.
Thank you, Chip. I appreciate it. It takes public comment now. Are there those in the audience that would like to speak on this issue or the ideas that were put forth today? Yes, sir. Mr. McLeod.
Good afternoon. John McLeod, 1228 Southeast 20th Avenue, Ocala, Florida. Council members, Mr. President, Mr. Zobler, I'm here on behalf of my wife who owns Gauze & Son Jewelers downtown, and I'm sure I'll probably interject my own opinion in the middle of that, which I'll get in trouble for. But first of all, not everything I was here to say is negative. The direction of downtown is wonderful, the way we're going. Love the parking garage. I park in the parking garage. If I have a lengthy stay downtown, I'll park there and walk over to where I'm going. If I have a quick stay, I'll use one of the spots around the square or on the side. I get my hair cut downtown, so you know that's over on the side, on the south side. So I do that for short stays. I love the idea of the valet program, as long as all the businesses would be invited to use that for their clientele also, in whatever shape or form that is. I think that would help tremendously, especially for our elderly citizens or people that can't get around as well. As you know, we have handicapped spaces downtown, but they're really not that many, and as many people as we have coming up in the villages, some other places of that nature, it tends to be a problem when somebody has a handicap or can't get around or can't walk from the, for instance, the parking garage to Shannon Ross or the parking garage to March or the movie theater and so forth and so on. On to the parking meters is where we have the biggest issue. I think the intention of the parking meters was good. I was on council when we were discussing this before.
I thought so.
Yes, ma'am. I knew you were going to ask that question, so I'm right here. I was here. The intention was good. The idea was good. But I don't think it's working out. They are difficult to use. The security guard at Gauze on a daily basis has to help someone in front of the store. For the most part, the younger clientele can work them like they work every electronic device very simply. Some of the older clientele do have a problem, and they also don't understand, you know, that you don't have to pay after a certain time period and things of that nature. You know, people that live here understand more. People that come to visit our town do not. I just don't see the need for us to continue having parking meters downtown. I think that day has come and gone. I still think we have to have timed spaces. My argument is not with that. I understand those spaces have a time limit and people should adhere to it. But we're not making a lot of money with these parking meters. I just don't see the need when we're probably running some folks away from coming to see our downtown and spending money. But so my idea would be to just, I mean, I don't know what the contract reads. You know, I don't know how long we're in the contract. I just don't have that information. But at some point, we should consider doing away with them altogether and a few more signs to indicate where our parking garage is, because it doesn't always look like a parking garage. Looks like other buildings. So that's my two cents, and speaking on behalf of my wife and her in-laws at Ungaz and Son. Thank you.
Do we happen to have that information?
Which information?
About the current contract with the...
I'm sure they do.
Tiffany Kimball, contracting officer for the city. The particular McKay contract that we're talking about has a monthly fee to service each meter. And right now we have, it was a 60-month contract. We have gone through 16 months, and so we have a remaining 44 months left. If indeed we decided to terminate the contract now, the fee that we would be required to pay is $52,778 to terminate.
Are we paying that fee now or no?
Yes, the fee, one moment. The fee for a two-space parking meter is $8.50 a month, and a one-space meter is $5 a month.
Okay. Other public comment? Angie?
Angie Lester with the Boyd Group. Do you need an address? 1720 Southeast 16th Avenue. I work with the Boyd Group in real estate, so I've worked with some of the businesses that are coming downtown, moving downtown, and several that are interested in possibly relocating and coming to our downtown, which is exciting. When we look at, I also serve with Ocala Main Street, when we look at other towns that have gone through a redevelopment and revitalization project like Delray Beach and downtown St. Pete and Asheville, North Carolina, meters are a fact of life, and it's working for them if that's kind of who we want to be when we grow up. I think some of our businesses, and talking to them from the Ocala Main Street perspective, are having some legitimate pains since the meters have come in, and if it's going to cost $52,000 to remove it and that doesn't seem viable, maybe there are some different options in between. I do have some letters from businesses, but since I have about three, if I could get that to you later so you could make it apart, that is that okay, or would you want me to read them?
I'll get them to Angel.
Okay.
Thank you.
Basically, to sum it up, we have a few different things. Additional valet, hours of the meters, education, signage, and the validation options for the businesses. So if we can talk about a couple of those. Validation options for the businesses. Some of the businesses have said, we didn't, and by the way, Chip and Heather, I love them, they're great. They've really done a great job, and you see them out there hours upon hours a day training people on how to use the meters. I think if we spend some time with the businesses and give them their options, Chip, was it you that told me we could, they can do an iPad, a point of sale, when their customer comes in so that they can advertise that they can validate their customer's parking meter, or maybe on the next trip they give them something that allows them to come back and it's going to validate their parking. I think some education on the business side would go a long, long way. Signage and education for the customers. I'm not going to tell who it was, but a city staff person and I were walking down the street the other day and tried to help some out-of-towners work a meter, and it took us all five about 4 or 5 minutes to work that meter. And we do this every day. So maybe some additional signage as to when it's free, stickers on the bottom of the meter, when it's free and how to use it would be great. Hours, you know, Becky's sitting back here. She owns one of those salons downtown. Every woman in this audience knows you cannot have lunch and get your hair done in under 2 hours, right? Help me out. So if we can let people know the different meters and the different hours of operation or the different limits on those meters, again, that's part of the education process. One of the biggies for the businesses that I met with last week is that valet. I know right now our current ordinance says one valet south of 40 and one north of 40. I love the March Prime Valet. I think every town going through what we're going through and growing like we are needs that upscale restaurant valet option. I think if we could look at an additional valet option south of 40 for all the other businesses to come together and use, both retail, lunch restaurants, and evening restaurants, that would be an enormous help. That would even be a help for a couple of businesses that are looking to come downtown that won't make that decision yet until they hear something. So that's all I have. I'll get those letters to you since we have several. Any other? No?
Any other public comments?
Hello. Adam Volpe, 95 Southeast 3rd Street. I am one of the owners of Pie on Broadway. I came in just to kind of observe and listen, was not planning on speaking, so my apologies if I seem a little unprepared. But I haven't really heard anyone address what I deal with all the time, which is the consumers that come downtown and the reactions that I get on the front lines of that. And, you know, we've been in business we're in our 10th year now at Pie, so I've seen the whole spectrum of prior, you know, before parking meters all the way to now and all the different iterations of with the sensors and all that. So just to touch on all those points briefly, you know, obviously confusion with the operations of the meters is a huge problem. I get customers all the time, you know, coming in asking how to work them. When I explain it to them, they're reluctant to use their credit cards in a machine on the side of a street for obvious safety reasons. They're, you know, obviously reluctant to download a new application onto their phone when they're presented with that option. And then the final option, of course, is coins, where they don't have them, and I'm having to produce change for people on a regular basis. My staff is having to take time away from what they're doing at their job to provide change for people. So that's the obvious one that everybody's kind of brought up. The other issue, which I heard talk about, the variance in filling the spaces at different times throughout the day, things of that nature. One thing I didn't hear really addressed as a possibility, I heard it mentioned that maybe people were going to other spaces or going to the garage or whatever, but hadn't heard any mention of the possibility that maybe people are just not coming downtown during that time, which from my perspective as a business owner, I've seen a quite significant drop off on lunchtime business for people, and I've heard verbal feedback that it is in fact because of the parking meters. To speak to that, also time is an issue again, as it was brought up before, but you know, anyone coming downtown that wants to grab lunch, go shopping, take the kids down to the chocolate shop, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if they have lunch and hit one store, that may be 2 hours, you know, and then they go to their car to move their car, they get in it, they start the ignition. I mean, what are the chances that they're going to go relocate to another location, park, pay another meter, do this again? More than likely, they're just going to leave instead of hitting the other businesses, you know, going on with their day the way that they had planned. From my perspective, I just haven't seen any benefit of it at all. My employees, of course, I understand we want to get them parking in other spaces, but, you know, they all deal with trials. Myself, personally, I mean, I've paid hundreds of dollars in parking fees. I've been booted. Most recently, I've received a $75 parking ticket, which in my mind and opinion is completely outrageous amount of money to pay for one single parking violation, but it is what it is, but I just wanted to give some perspective on the feedback I get from my customers and, you know, just voice that, you know, I really haven't seen any positives from this, and I see no benefit of it thus far. So that's it. Thank you.
Any other public comments on the parking program? Chip, do you have something you want to say?
Council, can I mention a little bit about the validation?
Sure.
Just seeing how that was brought up. We do have validation capabilities, and we do have a couple of the owners in the downtown businesses that do utilize that quite frequently. Cyrus the Rug Man pays for his visitors 50 cents, what have you. But it also just prints out a little code. They put the code in, and they can go with that. So we do have a few customers, and we have another customer that wants to investigate that in February. So to discuss validation, we do have the capability, and we have some that are using it.
Any other public comment before council begins discussions? Brad, you have a comment? Oh, I got excited. You're walking up here.
Shannon Roth, 2117 Southeast 16th Lane is my residence. I am Shannon Roth Collection. I wasn't planning on speaking either, so I have no idea what's going to come out. So just bear with me. First of all, I agree with everything he said regarding Infinite Nail Works, and those same things affect our store. And we, if we have somebody who really complains, when I remember, I will just take $2 off of their invoice for parking, whether they've been downtown 2 hours or not, because it just seems like, you know, the customer service thing to do. I understand we need to control the parking. I'm not saying we don't need this parking control, because otherwise you would have employees parking right in front of their stores on everybody. I do it sometimes, but it's usually to unload whatever's in my car or load to go somewhere, and I try to remember to move. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, but it's never intentional. We pay for our employees to park in one of your lots monthly. We've been doing this for years. So we do understand that we think we do what's right and we want to do what's right, but we just don't know what to do about the customers who constantly complain and the ones we have lost because they are angry about the meters, whether it's because simply they have to use a meter or they don't know how to use a meter or the time's not long enough. Maybe we could go to 3 hours and see how that works. That could help a lot, I think, as a constructive criticism. I don't know for sure, but we will have a customer in the store who's really interested in looking and maybe considering things, and all of a sudden they'll remember, oh my gosh, my parking meter's running out, and they leave and they don't come back. So I'll probably think of 20 more things I wanted to tell you all when I sit down, but thanks for doing this today. We really need it. We need your consideration.
Thank you. Other public comment? Okay. Anybody?
Sure. So this is the issue of parking meters is something I heard a lot about. Obviously, most of you all know this is probably my fourth or fifth meeting as a city council member, and just went through the campaign and was elected in September. Parking meters came up a lot. I went and talked downtown with your mother-in-law, John, and with other businesses, and I heard anecdotally what we heard today from Adam and what we heard from Shannon. It's a real problem with our customers. I think, based on what I've heard, there's a lot of good intention that went into the program and a lot of good ideas. Based on what we were presented today, I don't see those goals being met or hit. You know, employees parking in front of their employer's place of business, to me, is an employer's problem, not a city problem, where we need to have meters to enforce that. Any employer, and I've worked all sorts of jobs throughout my life. When I first got my license, when I was 17 years old, and I was working at the mall, I was told where to park, and it was in the back row, and that's where I parked because I wanted my job. I didn't park right in front of the store. And so I don't think it's this council's job or government's job in general to tell people where to park to help facilitate business. That's the employer's job. Turnover, I think that was a big thing, right? We want to increase turnover so we get more people in downtown. Based on the numbers that I'm seeing here, and I feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, it looks like we're seeing less people come to downtown. We're not seeing higher turnover and more people coming. We're seeing less people come, whether that's anecdotal from our businesses or from the little pucks that are on the ground. It seems like that's down, and that's a problem. We're putting a lot of money into downtown, as we should. You know, this could be the crown jewel of Ocala, and I look forward to being a part of that. I just don't see the benefit, based on our goals, that we're getting from the parking meters personally. From 2016 to 2017, we collected more than $50,000 from residents and guests than we did the year before. $50,000. Well, I mean, that's the cost of our contract going forward for the next 44 months. But that's also money that didn't see it. There's no discernible benefit from it, right? We didn't get increased revenue to help our council pay our bills or offer any other services to our residents or guests. You know, we're not seeing that turnover. It is revenue neutral, but it's not paying down our capital expenditures, I think, which is what we were told as a council would happen. And maybe that'll change over time. To me, it's about creating the most customer-friendly downtown we can, right? Because without customers, we don't have businesses. And so we want those customers to come in and spend as long as they can there without having to worry about whether their meter's about to hit so they run out of the store. That's the last thing that you want to see. And your competitors, whether it's a restaurant or whether it's a clothing store, out 200 or down 40, don't deal with parking meters. You know, you pay a premium to be downtown, and your customers are unfortunately having to pay a premium to be downtown as well. When I think the money we're spending, to me, it should be free. You should be free to park downtown anywhere you want, if whether that's walking from the garage. You know, hopefully it gets to the point where we need another garage. You know, that would be a great problem to have. That means people are coming down here. That means people are living here. And that means we're doing the right thing as a city. You know, our busiest time is after the meters are off. You know, we're not going to see increased turnover at that time. So this isn't a 9-to-5 problem. This is an evening problem in some regards. So I know there's no questions anywhere in this. But we don't get the opportunity to kind of voice our opinions publicly without being in front of other councilmen and women. So, you know, unless there's a discernible benefit to the residents of our city or our customers, I personally don't see a reason why the parking program should continue. Now, I'm flexible. I think adding free parking to the front of the meter or changing the times is a valuable tool. I think it's going to create more confusion, that latter point. When you have some areas that are 2, some areas that are 3, some areas that are 4, that creates confusion, and confusion is already a problem with what we're seeing down there. Now, I've never personally had a problem working one of the parking meters, but I've helped many people who have. I've sat in restaurants while I've been eating and watching people struggle with them. I've talked to the busboys and the servers and asked them if that's a problem that they're seeing. Every single one comes back. It absolutely is. So if there's a discernible benefit, you know, please show it to me. I would love to be convinced otherwise. I just don't see a reason to have parking meters moving forward. So, thank you.
I mean, do we just want to turn it into the Wild Wild West? Everybody parks where they want, stays as long as they want. If you take out the meters, who's going to enforce a 2-hour limit or a 3-hour limit? I'm going to tell you, this isn't revenue neutral. These salaries are staying whether you have parking meters or not. Is that pretty much a true comment, Mr. Zobler?
Mr. Rich, as the project manager, we would try to find a home for the other employees.
But you still have to manage parking downtown. Just because you do away with the meters.
I don't know what parking looks like without meters.
If there's no enforcement,
then there's no enforcement.
So if that's where we're going, I think that's just...
I know what it looks like without meters, and it's horrible.
I agree with you, Ms. Rick.
Because people are forever shuffling cars. They're getting boots on their cars. And like Shannon Ross said, they pay for their employees to park in another space. That's what they eventually had to do for over my office by the Department of Corrections over there. Murphy, they paid for us to park in Murphy's place because we were forever getting tickets. And it takes more people than Chip and Heather to monitor that, to go all over this downtown seeing who parks. You got to mark the tires. You got to go back and see if the tire's been moved. It's just a pain in the tush to try to monitor parking without meters. It's terrible.
So I think the only other way to do it would be just to not monitor it.
Just let people park at will wherever they want.
Yeah, that sounds scary, and calling the Wild Wild West and all stuff scary. It's what we do every single night after 6 o'clock when we're the busiest we are downtown. So clearly, it's not that big of an issue. Every single night and every weekend, there are no meters being enforced downtown. That's when the businesses are most successful.
Ty, if a car stays overnight, what's the policy right now?
Well, there is. It's listed as no parking overnight, as well as the garage. And like I said before, 2008, we did not have meters around the square. And so the meters were somewhat in the parking lot, but we did have parking enforcement. Going all the way back to the 60s, I mean, they've been chalking tires and doing parking enforcement. And believe me, back in the 90s and I'm sure in the 80s, they were a lot more aggressive in terms of enforcing those two-hour spaces. We're not nearly as aggressive as previous versions of the parking program. But again, they were parking enforcement around the square, parking enforcement in front of the businesses, as well as all two-hour spaces. So none of that has changed. I mean, yes, we could eliminate all hours, but, you know, that would be, again, that would be concerning how to manage, because you remember, part of it is we're the parking exempt zone requires for us to provide parking. So, you know, if another hotel or another business, now, of course, any businesses that would come in and want to put up a large building, it'd be crazy not to have something worked out with parking. But in theory, we're responsible to build that parking. We don't have to build it on their time schedule, but we would have to build it at some point by the parking exempt zone. So it all kind of works together. I mean, and that's what I was trying to do with my presentation, was showing that it all kind of works together, and you have to have that balance. And having the free spaces in the garage, on street, two-hour enforcement parking, and then the meters all tried to work towards that goal. But yeah, I mean, just when you mentioned, the numbers do show down, and I, you know, we thinking the people are moving towards the garage, but we can't say 100% that's the case. But we think, especially if you look at those two blocks, I kind of target was Broadway and Magnolia there. I mean, they were at a pretty high occupancy rate all during the day when it was just two-hour enforcement. And now there are. Now, is that good? I don't, you know, like I said, and it's up to the merchants to make that decision.
Broadway and Magnolia is where Starbucks was, correct?
Well, I was looking at that block there in front of Mark's and Shannon's business, that block right there and on the square, as well as the in front of the Gauze and Harris.
It seemed to me once Starbucks moved, that's about when they moved, is when the occupancy of some of those spots went down. So I even wrote it down here, the loss of the Starbucks right downtown. I know they moved to the outer edges of downtown. Did that contribute to some of that? I would think yes, because every time I went there, I mean, there was 40, 50 people there from anywhere from 9 a.m. to noon just about every day.
And that whole block of Magnolia in front of the theater, it was hard to judge because it was closed so much last year and everything. And there's been, you know, issues with the garage under construction. We tried to take into account all of that in trying to look at the data.
Well, I mean, let me just go on. I got a couple more bullet points here. I mean, I think you hit, I think we can do a better job of communicating via use of the sign. I think expanding the parking meter to a 3-hour versus a 2-hour, you know, would alleviate a lot of the problems of having lunch and then wanting to do shopping or, you know, personal care. I think there are ways that we need to try first before we just abandon the parking. But if we decide to abandon the parking meters, I think that means we are going to abandon our efforts to monitor parking downtown. You can't have it both ways. You can't take out the parking meters, as Ms. Rich said, and then go back to the way you used to enforce it back in the 70s and 80s by chalking it and you know, constantly having, you know, people monitoring it. It's too expensive, I think.
We've got those street line pucks that tell them exactly when someone pulls in and pulls out. They can sit in front of a computer and one person can monitor every spot down.
So you're still going to keep these salaries in there. And then you got to send somebody out to enforce it.
Yeah, yeah. But that $50,000, even for her, you know, for the salary of 36 plus the other one,
mm-hmm.
what's that worth to us? I mean, if you got these occupancy rates are terrible. These are the top five blocks of occupancy. 1 year ago, none of them were below 76%. This year, you've only got one above 76%, and the next one's 67%. I mean, that's terrible.
That's quantitatively, and you're hearing anecdotally from the business.
Look, if we get rid of the meters, you're right. We got to figure out something, but I wouldn't say we couldn't do anything, because before this, we only had 62 metered spots. We got by. Before that, we only had the few spots on the not around the square that were metered, and we got by. We figured it out. There are options that would help people come downtown. I think it's any time you put a block in someone coming downtown and spending money is a bad thing for us.
But how's it going to be for the person who drives down? Because I remember, to me, it's easier to find a spot downtown now than it was.
I agree. It's much easier.
Previous, because you drive around, there's no spots. So how is that not frustrating? Is it better to say the client, customer, patron drives around and can't find a spot?
They'd rather have more patrons. That means they've got less patrons, and I think that's a bad thing.
I don't see that they've got less patrons.
Does anyone,
the DDC have something to do with us getting monitoring parking downtown? They wanted us to do something because this business was complaining that business is people parked in their front of their stores.
And a meter doesn't stop that.
They couldn't.
A meter doesn't stop that, Ms. Rich. I'm sorry to cut you off, but a meter doesn't stop that. A meter's a meter. Shannon Roth can pay the meter in front of her business just like she can pay the meter in front of Mark's.
I think rather than get rid of the meters, we might need to work on it a little more, but we need to inform them about validation. I've been in a lot of cities where stores validate your parking and people can park. But just to get rid of a system that was asked for, I mean, maybe they didn't ask for meters, but they asked for us to do something to control the parking downtown. So what? Nothing controls it then.
The number one issue is, in most parking studies, is the issue of the employees parking in the long, in the short-term spaces and everything. And so I think we're not the only ones struggling with that, but that it is kind of the number one issue in just about every study. And so when we looked at, when we did that study, it was important to understand that, we didn't want to put more meters on the time when we didn't have other capacity. There was no other capacity to put people so they could park free. And so it was all timed with the garage. And that was a conscious effort to make sure that we had enough free parking. And we still need to get more free parking as much as we can provide so that we can give as many options so that the person who wants to come in just for a short period of time and park right in front of the business pays the meter versus somebody who may want to park, stay longer, and has a free option two blocks or a block and a half away. I think part of, in some of the studies I've read, it shows that people will, if you have that choice in paying something every day and you can provide it free and still within a shorter, safer distance, I think people do tend to eventually migrate to that free area and leave those spaces available. But, I think some of the data is showing that, but I can't dispute that the numbers are down from 2016 to 2017.
Well, It sounds like we need to make a decision. Is there consensus to pull them out? If there's not, then we got to do some things to edit them. So, I mean, is there consensus to pull them out? I would do it if we could.
No.
It's 3-2. We don't want to pull them out, so what can we do to fix them?
We had a number of things brought up, the increased signage, the thing on the meter itself, free parking, that needs to be explained, and go into a 3-hour on the meter.
I think we're making a mistake being married to a program just because some of us voted for it. It's not working.
I'm not married to it because I voted for it.
It's not
at all.
Working.
I'm not married to it at all.
What data is showing you it's working? And I'm not trying to put you on.
What data is showing it's not working?
Right here, occupancy rates. There's not a single block above where it was last year.
And we have business owners coming in and saying it's an obstacle to them being.
And how do you know that if you pull them all out, that the business owners aren't going to come in a year from now and say, you know what, nobody can park in front of my store anymore? Because the guys from two stores down, they're parking in front of my stores. The boss won't let them park in front of their store. They park in front of my store. And you got all kind of things that are just going to, that could go on. You
well,
had
well,
Angie
we won't have a problem because there won't be a single damn business left downtown.
Oh, that's just bull. That's just bull.
We already saw one close its doors.
May I say something?
You know, hold on just a second. They close their doors in the mall, the Paddock Mall. They close their doors in the Heathbrook. I mean, they close their doors all over Ocala.
They didn't write us a letter saying it was because of the parking meters.
And this is somebody who's been successful year after year, decades downtown, who said that this is a direct result of the feedback from her the people coming to her store shop.
I mean, you can't ignore that type of
information. When it was free parking, people couldn't park in front of her store because all the employees and everybody else, once they got in a parking spot, they stayed there. They don't move. So people coming downtown still couldn't find a spot.
We had 62 metered spots. We now have 262. That's over a 400% increase in metered spots.
We also have a parking garage.
And we have a parking garage. But if the consensus isn't here to pull them out, which I believe is a mistake, but we know that.
Can I say something?
Yes, sir.
I've been quiet. And I've tried to just be neutral and listen, because I've been on both sides of the fence. We had meters all my life, almost downtown. Then we got them to take them out. And at that point, it was the worst thing that ever happened. We couldn't find a place to park with the attorneys and their secretaries and everybody else parked in the free parking downtown. I just talked to one of the meter maids that worked there for 10 years, and she said some of them were up to $3,000 and $4,000 worth of tickets and didn't pay them. Now, I've been through both. We got the meters back on, okay? And then it started opening up areas. Today, you can tweak these meters where we couldn't back in those days. You couldn't do a thing to them. And fortunately, I rented a behind my store. You remember, Ms. Rich, we had 30 spaces that we rented for 10 years. But that's we were lucky, okay? But the meters did not hurt us that much. How many people on this board sit here right now has had businesses downtown and know what's really going on? We've heard from four different people of the downtown. How many businesses are downtown?
Quite a few.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to hurt anybody. I know what it's like to feel that the meters are keeping people away. I know what it's like to have free parking, okay? But we got to make some kind of arrangements. We can't do away with and pay off $52,000, and you got salaries that are going to continue whether we have meters or not. Then you're going to have people riding scooters and marking them all day long.
We've got those things in the ground that they don't have to do that.
Yeah, but they're still going to have to do some of it. It's just not going to get away. So I think we need to first is try to put more time on the meters, give them free time at the beginning or something, and more signs and more things to do to help it. If it's not then we can go back and re-look at it again.
tired, Chip, do we have the ability to give the first 20 or 30 minutes free? Is there ability to program them that way?
I don't think we could, but we looked into it.
I was told that we could.
We were going to check into that location, but the way the meters work right now, I don't think that's possible. But we'll look and see what type of meter they have.
Something I think we need to understand the full spectrum of tweaks and possibilities that exist outside of removal. Right?
Does McKay have like a brochure or something that shows the options that we have? I mean, they're here today, which I don't know why they aren't here tomorrow, because we're having this meeting today, but I mean, what can they, do we know what they can do and change?
Mike, what Chip's coming up? Next meeting, we direct staff to come up with ideas.
I did direct staff to do that before this meeting. I asked for all the options we got with the meters and changes.
I think they gave you a bunch of the options, and I think we even came up with some more options today.
We didn't come up.
But we're going to sit here until 5 o'clock, okay? And you don't have the votes to pull the meters.
That's why I'm working on the options. If I pull them, I already done it. That's why I'm asking for the options.
And I think we've asked them for it.
We can't.
They've given us options.
We have changed times. We currently have 10-hour meters. We have some meter locations that we're allowing 4 in. And then we have 2-hour meters that are basically the ones that are concentrated right directly in front of the businesses. So I'll use Pi as an example. The meters that are right on street in front of the businesses are 2, but the meters that are in the parking lot are 10. So if people have extended stays, so that's probably my fault for, I mean, we have a sign that says they're 10 hours, but maybe we need to communicate better and get our message out better. I also like the idea if we can maybe change the screen during off hours to say, you know, payment is not required. That would give somebody who sticks money in there because they want to, the opportunity to stick money in there. But others would also further recognize that they don't have to. I think we selected the 2-hour time limit through discussions with the DBA, the Gibbs study, and the parking studies that were committed. But if it's a means to change the timing to 3 hours, I think that's very doable. We have a lot of options that are available to us within the meters that we have or without.
Can I ask a question? Chip.
Yes, sir.
If we do change the 3 hours, I would suggest you do it to all of them, not just.
So remove the 10 hours.
And no, not, the lots are different. I'm talking about on streets, yes, sir, where people use them more and more. You don't want to confuse them 2 hours here and 3 hours there, whatever.
I agree. I think that consistency is a very important part to what we're doing. It makes it easier for where people park in different areas that they have a consistent feel right. And feeling.
Okay. We'll move on to the Cal Fiber Network presentation. And I'm going to eat some of this cookie so I get in a better mood.
You're angry.
Why did you need your cookie?
You thought I was going to eat it.
You know the food?
You need a Snickers.
Yeah, get a Snickers.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Mel Poole, director of Ocala Fiber Network.
Hello.
Guys doing okay?
Oh, yeah.
Well, hopefully I have some good news to bring to you and then take some questions from you. But before I get started into the presentation, I'd like to kind of give you a little bit of history on how we got to this current business plan. So back in probably late 2015, we had a council directed for a study to come in. We hired Columbia Telecommunications Company. They came in, kind of gave council a high-level overview of what the system's capabilities are. And they also made a recommendation to possibly go out and do a public-private partnership. From that, we issued an RFI and an RFP to go out and see what that market looked like. What did that public-private partnership look like? From there, we compiled all of that information, and we also offered a business plan to give council some options as how we move forward. So today I'm going to kind of catch you up on where we are as far as the business plan that council approved back in May 2016, which said that OFN will continue to do business as serving city government facilities, small businesses, and commercial entities. And also in it, they stated to go out and try to solicit or do some contractual agreements with other businesses out in the county. That led to us pursuing a contract with the school board of Marion County, which ultimately we ended up being awarded that contract, which is $1.3 million annually. Let me talk a little bit about the school board contract as we're well on our way. It was a contract to provide connectivity for 49 schools throughout Marion County. We budgeted that at about $3.2 million. I can tell you we are ahead of schedule, even though Irma came in and kind of wreaked a little bit of havoc on us. We got a little bit behind, but now we're about 92% complete on the school board project. And probably more important, here's some good news for you. It looks like we're probably going to come in about $1 million under budget. So I think that's a good news story for you moving forward. But the school board project is going very well. We look to have that billing to start commencing in July 1st, 2018. And simultaneously to us winning that award for that contract, we still continue to operate our business based off the business plan, which was connecting customers to include residential customers. Well, when we opened up the gateway for that, the floodgates opened. So we got inundated with a whole host of customers wanting that service. So it created a backlog. So here's another good news story for you. We have since completed that backlog. So there are no more backlog of residential customers waiting for service. Now, what I like to say, what that did was it caused council to put out a moratorium to hold up on some of the residential contracts. That gave us enough time to kind of get our act together and get those customers off of that waiting list. So today I would like to say to council, if we probably take a more planned, systematic approach to modify the existing way we do business. And what I mean by that, implementing fiber to the premise, which is a concept, which leads into GPON technology. And I'll talk a little bit about GPON technology. But our main thing was what we want to do is to have that modification to allow for us to do easy connects, which we kind of consider them as individual business cases. And probably more importantly, pre-qualified neighborhoods. Now, you'll see later on in the slides, we've selected four neighborhoods based off of some customer data coming in and saying, hey, we have some good take rates on these said neighborhoods. So selecting those four neighborhoods based off that data, and I'm sorry, let me go back one slide. I want to talk a little bit about fiber to the premise and what that means. Again, that's a concept. We want to use GPON technology. As we were moving forward and got a backlog of customers waiting to be connected, we were doing what we call or consider just some spotted developments throughout the city, which in turn, we was just building here, there, everywhere, not really having a great plan put together on how we're going to attack this problem. But the GPON technology, which will allow us to take one piece of glass, going to, and let's just use round numbers, a neighborhood of 32, we have a switch that connects 32 homes using one piece of glass. Today, that is not how we do business. Now, we have some testing going on right now with a company that we're testing some GPON equipment on, but that is the premise of the GPON technology, which in turn ultimately will save us money, truck rolls, all sorts of things. But the way we're doing it now, it will not allow us to be proficient at providing customer service. So moving forward, we've selected four neighborhoods. They're Belchase, Windstream, which are two underground neighborhoods, and Happiness Homes, and the Highlands, which are two overhead neighborhoods. And then moving forward in those two neighborhoods, we want to start a pretty robust marketing campaign to find out where that take rate is. The industry standard for a take rate is roughly about 30%. That was kind of recommended through CTC study as well, that 30% gives us a good positive cash flow coming back to the city. So 30% is kind of what we modeled it after, but going into the neighborhoods, if we really don't hit that 30% for an overhead or on the ground, we'd probably step down to a 25 or 20% take rate to go ahead and build those neighborhoods out. So if you see that second bullet where it says self-funded, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the financial model of it once we get into the financial slides of it. But as you see, it's 2019 and 2020. In the current business plan, we stated that we would take roughly about $2.5 million and inject that into our operating fund to go out and build out roughly about 1,500 homes over a year of time with a 10-year program. That's the business plan as it currently stands. Now, looking at the numbers when we kind of flow through them, again, I'll step you through that once we get to the financials. Once we take a look at that, you'll kind of get an idea where I'm coming from. But I'll just kind of go over it briefly real quick right now. If we interject $750,000, what we do right now, which is currently doing business customers, some individual business cases, we'll still keep the business model going, revenues flowing in. If we wait until 2020, where we have 1 year of the reserves, 1 year of revenue coming in from the school board, we'll have roughly about $1.7 million in reserves. If we don't wait till 20, and you'll see this on the next slide, or the upcoming slides, we'll have about 37K in reserves. So that's the difference when I talk about FY19 and FY20. So back to the neighborhoods. In order for us, in my mind, to be successful, we have to create a marketing campaign to go into these neighborhoods and see exactly what that take rate is. Once we get that take rate, we'll design it, engineer it, and here's an important factor. We want our customers, potential customers, to pre-qualify. What does that do? That shows us they're committed to this project that we're doing instead of saying, hey, we want it and we build it and then they don't come. So the model there is we have them do a $120 deposit. That shows us that they have an interest in getting that service. And once we do that, we'll start engineering and designing those neighborhoods, providing that service at $60 a month. So that's the contract portion of it. And when we talk about that last bullet as far as adding residential customers and the infrastructure is the key. If we had infrastructure when that backlog of customers were knocking down the door to get the service, we probably wouldn't have had that backlog because we would have the infrastructure to go ahead and connect them. So the infrastructure is the key for us to move forward with OFN. So I'm going to step you through some of the financial highlights. Next slide, we're going to take you through about 5 years of what we've been doing over the past. So you'll see that we went from $2.5 million in 13 up to $4 million in 17, which is approximately 15% increase. If you look at the expenditures, we went from $2.4 million to $3.5 million, which is an 11% increase. And then the reserves, $4.3 to $5 million, 30% increase. And that fourth bullet there, the $3.2 million, we took that from the reserves to do the school board project. Again, running the numbers, looks like we're going to come in a little bit on the budget on that piece. And obviously, we had to add some staff and equipment to make all of those things happen. So kind of a deep dive into our operating revenues and our expenses based off the current business plan. So if you look at those numbers, starting out in 2019, if you look at our revenues, the blue line there, 6.4, you'll see it increased to 2023 to almost $12 million. That's in our revenues based off the current business plan, injecting about $2 million into the project. And our revenues kind of flatline there from 6.9 up to 7.8 million. I think that's relatively flat. But here's where I want you to kind of pay attention to this slide right here. When I talk about the reserves, if we dive in 2019, our reserves are down to 37K. Now, they recover in 2023 up to 7.5 million. That's if we start the plan today as it stands for 2.5 million. So hold that thought. And we're going to switch over to 2020. Same plan, we just wait a year based off of getting the reserve of the revenue from the school board project, which I stated earlier was $1.3 million. So if we look at the revenues coming in, 6.3, 6.4, up to 10.7, 10.8 in 2023. Look at the expenses. Kind of saying they kind of spike a little bit in 2020. That's because we're going to inject that $2.2 million in there. But here's a kind of the spike here. So in 2019, you see we jump up to $1.7 million in the reserves. That's because we'll have that revenue coming in from the school board. Also, we have some other revenues coming in as we have probably $2.4 million in revenue coming in. So you'll see we'll recover pretty quick going if we wait that 1 year. The difference being in 2023, we're at $5 million. I think when we look at 2024, I think it jumps up to about $8 million. So the option here is, you know, do we start now or do we start in 2019? Here's some of staff recommendations is to continue to field business requests throughout the city in the service territory. Again, I told you we selected four neighborhoods, which were Belchase, Windstream, Happiness Homes, and the Highlands. We already have those selected. We want to start the advertisement. We want to get that 30% take rate and start moving forward that program. And then self-funded at 2020, where we go in and inject $2.5 million into the program, or we can start it in 2019. It's totally up to council's recommendation on that, or direction on that, I should say, and obviously adding additional staff. So that being said, I know it was kind of quick, but I'm here for any questions, thoughts you may have.
Now, how far down that process of the neighborhood take rate and pre-qualifying folks do you have to get before you have to spend money on building some infrastructure?
So we can already start, and we will continue to add infrastructure in based off the three-quarter of a million that we have out there. So we'll continue to make progress and do individual business cases on connecting customers.
Are you going to survey the neighborhoods to find out if they're really interested?
Yes, ma'am. That's why the...
Market it. Explain to them exactly.
Correct. That's why we want to get a marketing firm in to help us walk through that. As a city, we've never really marketed like that before, I don't think. I'm relatively new, but I don't think we've done a marketing campaign on this scale, but I think it needs to be a pretty in-depth marketing campaign to go out and target these said neighborhoods and moving forward, that be the kind of a process of how we keep the business moving.
$120 you have to have in on that 30%, right?
Sir?
$120 deposit?
Yes, sir.
You want that in before you start?
Correct. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, that just gives us, like I said, a commitment.
Make sure they're going to do it.
Exactly.
What he's talking about.
You want that before you do the marketing?
That would be preferred.
Well, I live in Happiness Homes, but I'm not going to charge $20, and if I don't know what I'm getting into, because I've got internet with somebody else.
Yes, ma'am.
And I don't know whether ours is better or not. And you might find that a lot. You might need to.
Sure, and that's just an option. I mean, we don't have to do that. just looking at a kind of a guaranteed take, and nothing's guaranteed in life. We know that. But as Mr. Molliver just said, we can return that. Or we can move it forward and say that's 2 months off of your contract. So it's kind of a win-win. But we have great customer service.
I was fortunate enough to get a preview of Mel's presentation at the Utility Advisory Board meeting that we had just recently, and I will say that the feedback from the advisory committee was positive, absolutely. They had some of the same questions you guys had as far as cost, as far as that upfront cost. Where's the kind of sweet spot, you know, as far as how much we should charge, whether that's the right thing to do. So they definitely had some, I think, same concerns there. You know, generally, Mel, I'll tell you, I told you this before, I think it's a good plan, but I'm not in telecommunications. Right. So I don't know, based on any experience, that's a good plan, except for that it seems to make sense to me. I did bring up and ask the question to the advisory board, because I thought it was important. You know, we're sort of getting into, and we kind of have been in, but we're getting into government taking on some roles of business, where you have competition. You have telecom companies that are huge and provide these
benefits, or not benefits, provide these services to their customers. It's an incredibly competitive field. You know, you'll see, I think, in this area of delivery, especially of information and communication, tremendous change in the next 20 years. So I have a lot of concerns going too far in and going down that road. I personally don't believe it's the proper role for government, but beyond that, I have concerns about our ability to adjust and kind of go with the market the way those behemoths can, because they can invest billions of dollars into doing these types of projects. We're talking about very, very little in comparison. I brought that up to the advisory board. There didn't seem to be a lot of concern there from them along those lines. Something concerned me in response to that question that I did get back was that, well, you know, now we can go ahead and start offering other things too, like potentially home security through internet and things of that nature. And to me, that really starts scaring me, because that's now we're totally off the rails from where we should be as a city and what we're offering to our residents. So just kind of a little update on what the advisory board had to say and my input there. Thank you, Mel. I think you're doing a great job.
You know, I think you're right. I don't particularly like to see us move into the commercial end with people, but we're fortunate to look ahead, and we've got so many hundreds of miles of fiber in the ground already and paid for. So I think you're doing the right thing to get a survey, Mel, and get it going. But I wouldn't go into any alarm systems and things like that. But I think the internet is important. Well, he brought the internet.
It was brought up by the
yeah. So I would think that you get started and let's see what we can do. That's all right away. I wouldn't wait, because other these other concerns, and who knows, they may come in and say, we're going to give you $20 million for your what you've done, and we'll use your stuff so much a year to add on to it. So we don't know, that could happen. And so I think it's a vital thing. Now, we may not be as big as the electrical company in what we do, but it would sure be a nice stream of money coming in.
Absolutely.
That way. And we can look at it that way, but instead of just one way. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Do we have a consensus that we like the idea of the four neighborhoods, you know, targeting those neighborhoods? I mean, do we have... is that what you're looking for? Some
yes, sir.
On that,
yeah.
Right.
I want to.
Yes, Mr. Wardell. We'd also like to. I would prefer if council would also support the recommendation to delay a year. I think between the marketing campaign and our ability to determine the take rate, and then to obtain the deposits and do some of the preliminary engineering, I think it's going to time well with 2020, and we'll be in a much better position to fund this from the reserves and getting our reserves down to 37,000, and trying to do it ahead of time. So I would ask for your support for that.
And you know, before I get too far ahead, is there any public comment on this issue? Just in case, I just want to make sure we're not missing anything. Okay. I don't see any. So do we have some? I know we can't vote, but some.
Yeah. One more question. So I had to step out for a minute. So during, while we're having those four test neighborhoods, the moratorium will continue on any additional residential hookups. Okay.
But not business.
I guess I'm okay with moving forward a little bit, but allowing the reserves to go down to 37,000 is just a non-starter for me. I'm assuming it's for the rest of the council. So
yeah.
This would be something that we'd be looking at down the road. I have a hard time believing, like Ms. Rich said, that somebody's going to pony up $120 when they're not going to know for sure that I'm going to get my internet 30 days from now, 60 days from now, or 180 days from now. Generally, when you go to one of the two major internet providers in town, Cox or Embark, we'll get out there today, tomorrow, or maybe the next day, and that's people are, and today's, you know, you if you can't get it today or tomorrow, you know,
yeah.
So, and then Justin, you tapped onto it. We have no idea what the technology is going to be 20 years from now. How about 5 years from now?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we don't know. Maybe dark fiber 5 years from now isn't worth a penny. Okay, you just don't know. So, I'd like to proceed, but very, very cautiously. But I think the idea of the four neighborhoods is good.
And Mel, I think you really got to tell me why I can't live without internet through the city.
If you
why
can tell
it's
Ms. Rich,
the best thing in my interest. to have.
So first and foremost, quality service, customer service. That's
I'm just saying that you got to market it.
Sure. And I'll work with the marketing team because Mel's opinion, I think we need to put some heads together to get there because I have my ideas, you have your ideas, but a marketing team would, that's why we want to get them involved to help us step through this. As I said earlier, I think John and I had this discussion that we've never really went down this road, so we're not the experts in marketing this thing, but I think we can get there. I can tell you, just look at the list backlog of customers we had that were beating down the doors and probably beating on your doors to get the service. You know, what we offer, and I'll just touch a little bit on what Mr. Gabriel said about what was held at the Utility Advisory Board. Here's another thing that is looming, if that's the right word, and it's called net neutrality. I don't know if you guys heard of that. Well, that's something that's coming down from the feds. And what it is, as I told the Utility Advisory Board, is it's like getting on the freeway, or better yet, getting on the turnpike where you pay a toll. So major ISPs, internet service providers, will be able to throttle your speeds once you get on that toll road. Those are the big boys that are doing that, the big companies. We as Ocala Fiber Network would never do that. So what does that mean? That means that we're going to offer a better service because we're not going to slow you down. If you pay for this speed, that's what you're going to get all the time. Not because you went to Hulu or Netflix, because we're going to throttle those, or they're going to throttle those. So there are some opportunities out there that really are going to probably set us apart even more, and net neutrality is one of those.
Well, I'm all for you going forward with this, but when I buy something, it's something I just got to have. Right. You know.
Not a want.
I can't just, sometimes I buy things because I want it. I don't have to have it, but.
Mel, without naming names of other companies, I mean, do you think that your service would be probably cheaper and quicker than the other services that might be available?
Of course.
I think that's the selling point.
I mean, yes, sir. You know. For what we offer and how we do it, remember, there's different models out there. You know, originally we talked about triple play and those type of things, and I think triple play may be on the way out just because now they're looking at a la carte for the internet. So you look at how the kids now are streaming, and there's things we have to think about, which my team has thought about and we're there, is the Internet of Things. And that's a whole conglomerate of things that's happening today. And the next wave is the Internet of Everything. And we're aside from the infrastructure, which I said earlier, that's important, we have the technology. We're testing GPON right now, which is what we'll deploy to be able to handle the fiber to the home concept. So sure, the technology will change. The city's been in this business somewhat for over 20 years. But our technology, we've been keeping up. Now we have to do our refresh, but that's part of the business.
Well, sounds like you got everything you need, but we would like to wait until 2020 so that those
2020, yeah,
don't dip as low, and that sounds pretty good to me.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that'll conclude the workshop. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate the discussion. Thank you.
You want this?